This is the SF Signal Podcast, episode number 2, powered by the Functional Nerds. My name is Patrick Hester. I'm an author and a blogger over at atfmb.com. And tonight I am joined by the folks who bring us sfsignal.com to talk about the news that caught our attention this week on the web. Let's introduce everyone. Since he was last week, I'm going to make him first this week. Mr. John DiNardo, hello.
How are you doing? This is John DiNardo, proprietor of SF Signal, blogger, and all-around, well, blogger.
That second voice you just heard laugh was Mr. John Anilio, Esquire.
Hello, I'm John Anilio. I write songs about science fiction and fantasy. You can get lots of my music for free at scifisongs.blogspot.com, and you can follow me on Twitter at twitter.com/John Anilio.
We also have with us tonight Mr. Jeff Patterson.
Good evening. I'm an occasional contributor to SF Signal. I blog at Gravity Lens, which can be found at baddaystudio.com. And I just want to say this is probably the most disappointing chat roulette session I've ever had.
And last but certainly not least, from the 501st, we have Mr. Andrew Liptak.
Hello, I'm Andrew Liptak. I'm a reviewer for SF Signal, and I've written for IO9. And tor.com, as well as my own site, andrewliptak.wordpress.com.
And the 501st?
Yes, and I'm a member of the 501st. If you're a fan of the 501st on Facebook, I'm the one who does most of the updates there.
And he won't tell us whether or not he really is from the future.
No, sorry, classified.
Well, it would be the past, right? Because Star Wars is in a long time ago, galaxy far, far away. So there you go.
Oh, shush.
Yeah. So the main topic tonight is something that I found over on sfsignal.com. And this is that the Sci-Fi Channel has announced a pretty ambitious slate of new scripted genre projects. It's killing me not to just say SIFI, so I'm going to say SIFI. And I'm wondering, are they kind of apologizing to the fans with all these new genre shows that they're putting up? Kind of apologizing for all the name changing and the wrestling and the We Want to Be a Normal Network. So are they apologizing with all these different shows? There's, was it 6 or 7 new genre shows? What do you think, Mr. Jeff Patterson?
Well, first of all, I'd like to say that I've always found it interesting up here in the Northeast on the convention scene that when I went, the biggest critics of wrestling on Sci-Fi Channel were the people who were live-action role players. I always found that very ironic. My take on the wrestling thing, and I do know a few people at Sci-Fi Channel, and this has kind of been leaked back to me occasionally. You know, wrestling was added for one reason, to make money.
Sure.
Sci-Fi Channel has always had a budget issue, you know, with its various owners and stuff like that. And it made money because it had viewers. And, you know, yes, it got attacked by a lot of fans, but, you know, these are the same people that didn't attack when John Edwards Crossing Over was on for 3 seasons, you know? I think that the strategy of doing that has paid off because now they have a bit of development money. True, a lot of that development money goes towards the Saturday night movies, but they're able to open the doors a little bit to more to the kind of stuff. I mean, there's a couple space operas that are listed there. There's a couple of shows that are genuinely defined as science fiction, and I think the reason they're able to do that now is because they've made some of the maneuvers that they've made in the past. I've been in broadcasting a long time, and programming a network is hard. It is. You have to, people call it broadcasting, but it's really narrow casting. Everybody knows that what you're sending out is only going to be going to a limited number of people.
Sure.
And, you know, you see all the science channels do all these great CGI, this is the way the world ends, what my girlfriend calls disaster porn. we see that on a regular basis because they know it's going to get eyes on the screen.
Sure.
And I think it's one of the reasons why the channel did some of the things it did in the past and basically saved money and did nothing but reality shows, and now they've got a little bit of money to play with.
I can see that. What do you think, Andrew? Andrew?
I circle with this. Oh, hello?
Hello? Go ahead. Go.
Okay. I agree. I think that it's a marketing decision. I wouldn't say that they're apologizing for what they've done in the past. What I would say is that it's part of a larger strategic set of programming that they're doing. I've actually been very impressed with the sci-fi, the new name change, and with how they've rolled that out. And I think that this is just the next sort of phase of development. Looking over the list, I have to say there's a bunch of shows I'm now really looking forward to. I don't have television at home, but it's certainly the chance to watch some of those is going to be something that will probably convince me to go and look for getting cable back so I can watch some of them. There's a lot of comparisons to Firefly and some space shows, which I've really been looking for.
Well, you have a superhero show. You have a bionic show with Lee Majors. You do have a space show called Orion. You have Robin Hood in the 23rd century. Kevin Sorbo is playing something on here. You have Human Relations, which they're comparing to Men in Black. And you have a zombie show. What do you think, John DiNardo?
I think these things sound great on paper. Like so many things, right? They got marketing guys to put in the right words in the right order to make this just sound golden, right? How can it miss? It's Firefly mixed with zombies mixed with, you know, they know all the buzzwords. So these all sound great, but I'm dubious, but I have an open mind, right? I'm willing to give them a shot. I do like they're currently running Eureka and Warehouse 13, which I kind of lumped together into lighthearted sci-fi. And
I love Eureka.
It's fun, isn't it?
It is.
It's just fun. And you can sit back. You don't have to scrutinize the science. It's all just hand waving anyway, nonsense. But I mean, it's just a fun time, and that's okay sometimes.
What do you think about the crossover?
I didn't see it yet. It's queued up on the TiVo, so I'll let you know.
Okay. John and Elia, what do you think?
Well, I think, I'm glad that DiNardo just said about the TiVo, because I think, with Sci-Fi Channel having the wrestling and all of that, I mean, I don't want to say how many people watch television live, but it's like if that wrestling helps them to bring in money, like I don't ever think I accidentally flipped on the Sci-Fi Channel and saw wrestling and was outraged. It was I watch a lot of the Sci-Fi Channel's programming, namely Stark Universe, and I watched Caprica and all that. And it's making money.
Forgot to name Stargate Universe. Another mission.
Just figured you're a hater, so.
Yeah. No, it's just that, if it had to make some decisions to make money, as much as the Sci-Fi Channel gets bagged on, they put out a lot of really good sci-fi shows, even if you're just counting Stargate Universe and Eureka and Warehouse 13 and Caprica. And, even if you don't love them, Caprica and Stargate Universe are high-quality shows just in terms of, the money put into them and the writing and the casting and all that kind of stuff. And, with all these new shows that they have planned, it seems that, all of them probably won't run. A lot of them will probably not see the light of day. But even if two or three of them do, and you add that to the slate that they already have, it's a pretty impressive, amount and variety of shows.
Sure.
It's always kind of funny with me, though. It's like as good as their series tend to be, it's like their movies, although it seems like that's turning around a lot of their movies are – I mean, maybe they're purposely bad. I don't know. I mean, I guess they're going for that sort of B movie kind of thing, and maybe it's
a B movie without the nudity, is what it is.
Yeah. So I don't know. I mean, it seems. I guess they're making. Isn't there like a project with Felicia Day? Is that a sci-fi movie that's coming out?
That's along the lines of their fairy tale thing. Yeah, it's called.
Yeah, it's like a little Red Riding Hood. I'm sure that'll be good and high quality, and that's a movie. So those seem to be good, but they're sort of Saturday Night Creature features or so.
And
but
Speedo 7.
Yeah, yeah.
Sure, they're movies for people to get stoned to.
Yeah, I get it. And hey, they'll make money too. But yeah, a lot of these shows look pretty good. I mean, I'd love to see some of these get made. So
hey, Andrew, I kind of cut you off when you were talking. Did you have something else you wanted to add?
No, not really. I mean, as I said, I guess I'll sort of second the thing that if the shows they're still on paper. But they have potential, I think. I'm looking forward to seeing what comes out of it. And I think that the Sci-Fi Channel has a very – they've got a fairly good track record with their TV shows. Not all of them, but I have high hopes. I suspect we'll see something interesting out of it.
Well, now, after I read this story, a drama llama dropped. Have you guys heard about the drama llama?
No.
I'll take your silence as a no.
Yeah.
Amber Benson, who was, she's in, like, Joss Whedon's stable of favorite actors. She played Tara on Buffy the Vampire Slayer. When she found out about this, she kind of said, whoa, wait a minute. One of these projects sounds an awful lot like the one that Adam Bush and I have been shopping around Hollywood for over 2.5 years now. One of the shows is called Human Relations, and the pitch is that it's The Office meets Men in Black. You have a lowly office temp who slowly discovers his totally off-the-wall bosses in this high-tech agency are actually aliens working on a planet to destroy the Earth. The pitch that she and Adam Bush have been putting around Hollywood for the last 2.5 years is called Drones, and they pitch it as The Office meets the day the Earth stood still. And it's about a guy who works in an office, and he finds that his kooky, off-kilter boss and coworkers are really aliens plotting to blow up the Earth.
That happens all the time in TV, though. I think, you know, a lot of the same, you know, sort of concepts are out there. I think it's very hard to, you know, lay claim to that kind of stuff sometimes. I think that happens more often than not.
Well, it's like the whole Deep Space Nine, Babylon 5.
Mm-hmm.
John DiNardo, do you remember that?
I do.
It's called
nothing more to add.
It's called Zeitgeist, people. Zeitgeist.
I grant you that there's lots of stuff out there, but I think there's also, you know, could these two have been developed independently of each other? Sure. But boy, their pitches sound incredibly similar.
Sure. I it's very likely that it could have been ripped off, but you never know. I mean, that kind of stuff happens all the time.
Now, Jeff, you said you've done a lot of stuff in television. I mean, what's your take on that?
Well, you know, all you need is two people mentioning something in a hallway or overhearing a conversation and stuff like that happens, number one. Number two, this is Hollywood we're talking about, not the most not the highest level of integrity that we've seen in the, you know, when it comes to their history of movies and ripoffs and stuff like that.
Really?
I mean, to an extent. You know, I mean, I got to say, I'm still a little disappointed that, you know, 2010 will be yet another year without a reboot of Homeboys from Outer Space. But, concepts and ideas and stuff like this, all you need is a couple people sitting around, you know, smashing two previous ideas. I mean, every single description here is this meets that. Or this spun by that, which tends to be how television works. Look at the upfront meetings that the networks do for like the last 10 years, and that's all you ever see. I mean, how many X-Files meets whatever shows did we end up with over the course of like a 10-year period?
12. was that a rhetorical question?
Including Baywatch Nights, I think.
Oh, my God. I can't believe you just brought that piece of garbage up. Oh, Lord. Did you see Hasselhoff is getting roasted by Comedy Central?
I cannot wait.
I think I'm going to have to watch that. That ranks up there with the Gene Simmons roast. Gonna have to check that out. Well, it sounds to me like the consensus is that, you know, we're going to kind of give them the benefit of the doubt. And we're going to just kind of take a wait-and-see attitude and you know, hopefully we get something of the caliber of Battlestar Galactica and not Flash Gordon.
Insert Flash Gordon.
Can I say
Gordon.
One thing, Patrick?
I'm not talking about the movie. I'm talking about the TV show that they tried to do.
Oof. That was dreadful.
Let's never mention it again.
All right. Well, I think that's all the time that we have tonight, guys. So
Can I say one more thing, Patrick?
What's in it for me?
It depends on what you need.
Scotch.
Scotch in it.
Yes, Jeff. You may say one last thing. Go ahead.
Okay, the one thing I'd like to say is this. A lot of people remember the big to-do when Farscape got canceled and everybody yelled at Sci-Fi and said that they were an evil corporation. And the reason it got canceled because its audience wasn't big enough. That was it. And the one thing that I would want to top this off with is that if one of these shows turns you on, if one of these shows really speaks to you, get the word out while it's in its infancy. Don't wait till it gets canceled. Get the word out aggressively. When shows get canceled, everyone tries to do their letter writing campaign, and by then the sets have been scrapped and the actors have gone on to other gigs.
Yeah, but that's a good point. People like to bag on the Sci-Fi Channel because it's fun and easy, for all the bad things that you can say about them, they're trying, they're out there, they're putting shows out, there are some good shows that they're putting on now, and credit where credit's due, right?
Well, and I never thought I would love Eureka, and boy, did that show just suck me in. Like you said, it's very fun. You kind of got to turn your brain off and not think too hard about it, but it's a fun little show.
Sure.
And it's almost like the fun little show that just keeps going. Go ahead, Andrew.
Sorry about that. I would say a good person to, if you're on Twitter, go follow at Sci-Fi. That's one of the VPs over at the Sci-Fi Channel, and he posts up a lot of really good information about what some of the inner working, as far as I can tell, what the inner workings are of the Sci-Fi Channel. And he did a couple posts for Boing Boing, and that really talked about sort of the mechanics of the industry. So if you're looking for a good place for some information on how that works, I'd say he's a good place to start.
Well, and keep in mind, just like Jeff said, it's all about ratings. But the difference between the Sci-Fi Channel and, let's say, Fox is that, what Fox considers to be a terrible show with really low ratings, the Sci-Fi Channel will say, oh, my God, this is like the best show we've ever had.
Yeah.
So if you have that, if something comes on and you like it, watch it and tell all your friends to watch it, and more than likely, if it's on the Sci-Fi Channel, it's going to stay on for a while.
I agree.
All right. Well, guys, I think we're done for this evening. I'd like to thank you all for being on again.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
And
when can I expect my check?
Yeah.
when he gets that scotch.
The check is in the mail. It's coming from Texas.
Yes.
That's where I live.
And, of course, we are, even though this segment of the podcast is ending, there will be another segment after this where we'll be interviewing Alex Martinez, who is a science fiction author. So if you're listening to the podcast, stick around for that. Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Tonight, Tim Zinsky, I'm hoping I'm pronouncing that correct, Zinsky, John DiNardo, and I are joined by Alex Award-winning science fiction and fantasy author Alex Lee Martinez. Alex, thank you so much for joining us tonight.
Oh, thank you.
John, why don't you say hello?
Hello, I'm John DiNardo from SFSignal.com, and you can follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/SFSignal. Happy to be here.
Tim, did I pronounce your last name correctly?
You did a fine job. My name's Tim Zinsky. I'm also an irregular over on SF Signal, and I'm happy to be present.
Yeah, you're a fanboy.
I am a fanboy. That's true.
That's always.
I'm also a beer and popcorn reader. So
he's more irregular than most. Actually, he's the one who he's the reason we call them irregulars.
Really?
No, not really. I just totally made that up.
That's good for my ego. Thanks, John.
No problem.
So, Alex, tell us a little bit about yourself.
Well, I'm a writer, a fantasy writer. 7 books out. That's about it. I mean, nothing else really interesting about me. I like board games, comic books, and monsters, and that's about it.
All right. So, comic books. Are you a DC guy, a Marvel guy, or an independent guy?
Right now, I'm not really any of them because they all kind of suck. But but I started out in Marvel. I became a little bit of a DC guy, and now I don't really read very many. If I do read, I read independents mostly, smaller ones.
See, I'm noticing a trend as I interview people and we start talking about comic books. A lot of them are saying, "Oh, I grew up with Marvel, and then I as I got older, I switched to DC."
Yeah, well, that's not uncommon. I don't know why. I mean, for me, it was just random because the first comic books I bought were Transformers and Mighty Thor.
Transformers and those were both comic books.
Marvel. Yeah. And so that just kind of got me started. And then I just, later on, only a couple years ago, I started buying DC comics. And then after that, I kind of stopped buying them all together. I'll buy like maybe one or two titles a week now. And it's usually smaller publishers, not the big boys.
I like to get the trade paperbacks, the big graphic novels. Because you get get the whole story. You don't have to.
I know, but I feel like they've killed. I know that why they did it, but I think they've really led to some really bad storytelling technique in writing comic books, and I don't like them. I think they've had a really negative effect on how stories are told in comic book format now.
Hmm. Well, I mean, for me, it's easier than going out and buying, you know, 6 or 7 issues.
Yeah, I understand that, and that's good. If it didn't have that tremendous other side effect, I'd be all for it. And I'm not against them, but I enjoy them when they come out. But it's why I feel like, well, to be honest, I think most storytelling is kind of boring now. It's like takes forever to go anywhere.
Gotcha. Just as a side note, did any of you guys hear about the family that found a Superman, first appearance of Superman in their basement recently? Their house was being foreclosed on. And they were actually packing the house up to get out because the bank was going to take it over. They get down in the basement. They're pulling out boxes. They come across the Superman comic, and it saves the house.
Wow. I did hear that. That's Superman saved their house.
Superman saved their house. So you said that you have 7 novels out, correct?
Mm-hmm.
And you started in 2005 with Gil's Allfright Diner.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Why did I stumble on that? For some reason, I was thinking like Fright Night. I don't know.
Everybody stumbles on that. It's a terrible title, but I came up with it because everyone tells you not to worry about the title because they're going to change it. So I was like, I don't know. This just worked for that, and they didn't change it. And then I was like, well, crap. I would have come up with something better if I known they were going to rely on me.
And then you had In the Company of Ogres in 2006. A Nameless Witch in 2007, The Automatic Detective in 2008, Too Many Curses in 2008 as well, and Monster in 2009, and Divine Misfortune in 2010.
Yeah. Yep. Wow, that's crazy.
You've been a busy little boy, haven't you?
I guess. Sometimes it's like when you know people talk about it, I'm like, wait a minute, I have got a lot of books out there. That's crazy.
Are these all set in the same continuity, or are these?
No. They're all standalones. Not even set in the same universe. You can read them in any order. They have nothing to do with each other at all. I know it's kind of unusual this day and age, but it's something I really enjoy doing. So, as long as people are buying my books, I'll keep doing it.
Mm-hmm. And what made you decide to get into writing novels?
Well, it's not really an inspiring story. It's kind of boring. I didn't really have – I just got out of high school, and I really didn't have any other plans about what I wanted to do. And I never – you know, there's people that are like, oh, I've wanted to write all my life. And I was like, well, I'm not one of those guys. I just started doing it maybe about 17 because I was bored. And then I was like, well, I don't I thought about going to college, but I would have been lousy at college because I'm lazy. And
I argued with the teachers, so they didn't particularly care for me.
Yeah, see, so it's like, it was just like, I was like, I told my mom, I'm like, I think I'm going to try writing. And she was like, well, go for it. It's cheaper than sending you to college, which you're not going to do good at. So if you write for like, you know, 4 years and you're really doing it, you know, writing, sending stuff out, I'll support you. And so she did that for 4 years and then nothing had happened, but she really believed in me. And so I kept at it. And that's basically why there was never anything else I wanted to do, in the sense that everything else just seemed like normal. I don't know. Closest I ever did was like when I was finally about to give up, I was thinking about going into juggling, which is another stable profession.
When I grow up, I want to be a juggler.
Yeah. It was just like, well, this is working out, so let me find something that's more reliable. let me give up on this crazy dream and find something that's sane to settle on. Juggling, that's the thing. And then it just sort of happened eventually, and here I am.
Well, little known fact, John DiNardo actually wanted to be part of the Flying Graysons, and then he found out.
Well, who didn't?
There were two openings. So.
Oh.
Ouch.
What? They're fictional. Come on. Oh.
Too soon. Too soon. Too
really. Soon. I think we need more scotch. Oh, good Lord. So I've got a question, right? So like you said, the books are not in any normal continuity. You know, where you grab inspiration for some of this stuff, right? So I've read a few of them. I haven't read them all, but I always wonder, right? So you read The Automatic Detective, and there's that sort of film noir backstory in there. I mean, it's, where do you start? I mean, what's the first thing that gets you going on to go down this path to write a story like that?
Well, it depends on the story. It's different for everyone. For a detective, that was exactly it. I wanted to write something with a robot because I like robots. And I wanted to write something like noir pulpish. And I always liked the old and it's like, I wanted to write something science fiction-y, but I was like, I'm not good at science fiction in the sense that I don't really know. I know basic science, but I don't know anything. Like if you're going to give me plausible science, I got no clue. So I was like, well, what if I just, you know, do a sort of retro science where it's like all the fake science that they're going to have in the future and none of the real science we have now, and kind of gives me an excuse, because then if somebody says, like, wait a minute, how come they don't have cell phones? I'm like, hey, it's fantasy. Deal with it. And so that was sort of the inspiration I really liked. And I like the old retro pulp. I love pulp. So that one sort of came because I kind of wanted to combine those three elements. I want to do something with a robot. I want to do something with sort of noir detective kind of narration. And I want to do something with science fiction, but like fake science fiction to make it easier on myself.
Yeah, it's a great book. I loved it. So
thank you.
What was – I'm trying to think of that there was a movie, and it was the guy from Will and Grace, and it was just a little while ago, and it was kind of like a throwback to the old 60s monster movies.
Yeah, it was
Space – no.
It was – wasn't it a zombie picture?
No, the one with the alien.
The aliens come down in the little alien town in down. New Mexico.
Yeah.
Alien Trespass.
Yes.
The problem with that movie was it was part homage to these 50s, you know, weird alien invasion sci-fi flicks, B movie things. And then it was but it took itself kind of, and it was trying to be campy, but it took itself too seriously, so it just like didn't work at all. It was
so hard to do those kind of things, because it's like, what makes a B movie charming is that they don't know they're doing a bad movie.
Right.
I mean, it's like a Lost Skeleton Cadaver. It's actually a pretty fun movie, but
Bubba
it can
Hotep.
Never be as bizarre and strange as like Plan 9 from Outer Space, because Plan 9 from Outer Space was made by people who thought they were doing something worth doing. And that's the beauty of it. Versus, you know, Last Skeleton, which is like, well, let's just have some fun. I'm like, well, that's nice, but it can never have the same heft, because that's what makes like Plan 9 such an enjoyable movie. Is it's like, man, Ed, you're putting your heart into this, and it's just not working.
They meant well.
Yeah, that always cracks me up when people put their heart in stuff and it fails. Yeah, I love that.
That's why I love Hamlet too. Have you seen Hamlet too?
Oh yes.
I love that movie because it's like, it's the only movie I've ever seen that salutes the half-assed, incompetent artist, and find something beautiful in that. And I think it's beautiful. I mean, it's why I do like Plan 9 from Outer Space. I mean, I think Ed Wood could have been a decent filmmaker if he'd been given a budget. Yeah, maybe not great, but it's just like, but this is like a guy who never really had a shot, and yet he did that, and he's putting his heart into it. And to me, I know it's common to like laugh at B-movies and try to mock them, and I can do that, but there's also something I think really inspiring about B movies to me for that reason.
I don't know about giving them a budget, because I mean, sometimes you give these guys a budget and what they do with it. I mean, look at Kevin Smith. You know, Clerks was a great little flick, and you give him a budget and he makes Jersey Girl.
Yeah.
Well, give him enough of a budget that he can have his controls on his airplane. That's all I ask for. This octopus has a motor in it. That's I'm not talking about $100 million. Oh, that would be awesome. I would love to see the movie Ed Wood could have made.
I'm not sure I want to. I'm not, I don't know. That's not a path I think I'm willing to go down.
I would take it. Give me a time machine, I would rescue Ed Wood.
Ed Wood presents Mars Attacks. So do you see these stories as an homage, or is that just the style and the genre that you prefer to write in?
Well, different, because they're not all like that. They're all different things. I don't know. I mean, it's more like I use the phrase pastiche. I write pastiche, which nobody uses, but it's kind of like built on these tropes and these ideas, but not so much an homage, not so much a parody, but just sort of the word is built on the ground floor, because they're all, like I said, Automatic Detective is my only noir one. It's the only one I've written like that, and so I don't know. I don't view it like that. I just view it as built on certain rules that have become part of our culture, and then seeing what I can do with it.
One thing your books do have in common is a sense of humor. They're all funny. Where do you draw that from? What books did you read growing up that made you want to lean towards that type of novel?
Well, that's a good question. Well, you know, I don't know. I'm just a funny guy.
just naturally funny,
as you can tell. And airline food. Why is it so bad?
And what is it about airline food?
What is up with those peanuts?
See, you're all good. And I think it's just part of the way I was raised. To be honest, I particularly don't care for comic. Like, I know I'm in the category of comic fantasy, but I don't read a lot of that. I don't really like it generally. And I'm not saying it's not good. It's just not something that necessarily appeals to me. More like the line, the idea of it's just, I think life is absurd whether you have dragons in it or not. So so that's where usually the humor comes from. It's sort of like, this is kind of stupid, this is kind of weird. But so I think it's just something that comes from natural observation.
So do some of your books then make statements about, statements about things that you see in real life?
Well, I try to avoid that. I try not to be preachy or anything like that, because it's like, what the hell do I know? So I mean, there's elements in there, but for the most part, no, there's not like messages. They're not the closest I had to messages, I think, is stuff like just relax, deal with life. But there's nothing in there that like Divine Misfortune is about gods, and a lot of people are disappointed because they think it should be about religion, but it's like, it's not really about religion. So I think sometimes you end up with this sort of idea that, you know, I'm going to tell you something important, but I think that can get out of hand. I think you don't have to beat people over the head with the message.
Now, do you ever find someone who's like an Uber fan who comes up to you at a signing or something, and sees themes and messages in your books that you never intended?
Good question. Well, I don't have a lot of Uber fans that I see. I mean, I'm pretty low level here. I mean, I meet a few people. Sometimes people will be excited to meet me, but for the most part, you know, I'm pretty small. People are like, oh, I kind of like you. I've had a few, like my agent gave me a really good thematic thing, which was about, like, all my stories are about, well, she's from New Zealand, so it was like, oh, just about average blokes just making it. And excuse
my
terrible.
That's the worst accent ever.
That's right. Well, not the worst accent ever, but close.
And, okay. It's not.
You haven't heard my Australian, which is really bad.
It's not Kevin Costner. What? But come on.
But she said them like that, and that's kind of something that I think popped in there. I also have a tendency to have slime monsters, which I didn't really notice until a friend of mine noticed it. So you think, like, you know, four books of slime monsters, and you'd be like, oh, that was intentional. And it was like, nope, I was kind of by accident. So besides average blokes and slime monsters, I really don't know anybody. No one else would give me anything too big.
Tim, you keep acting like you have another question.
No, I'm I'm laughing. I'm thinking about some other stuff, right? I mean, that would be the comment I made. The books I've read, they're all generally about that, you know, the average guy, right? So, Divine Misfortune Monster it's just a guy in a unusual situation, right? I mean, that's really the way it felt.
Go ahead. Well, Monster, I wrote because I did want to write that, because it's always like one of the things that they do in fantasy, especially in urban fantasy, is they take a normal person, they turn him into like the coolest guy in the universe. And so when I wrote that story, I really wanted to do like, this is contemporary fantasy. You're a working stiff, and you're going to be a working stiff till you die.
Yeah, and that character was great, right? The power shifts and everything else it's almost like a dungeon master gone wrong. It's like, you can have any power you want, but I get to give you a disadvantage to go along with it. And so it's like, great, I want to be invisible. And so they say only when you close your eyes or something like that. You're invulnerable except when it rains or something, right?
I'll have you know, as a card-carrying dungeon master, that we would never do anything like that.
Really?
I promise.
So,
I tell you what, I love the covers. Who's doing the cover art for you?
Well, it varies. It depends on the, like, I think the first two were by an artist named Jeff Soto, and after that, I'm not sure. I don't pay attention to that since I don't control it, and it's a headache for me because I don't know how to do it. I don't know the marketing. So I just trust them to do a good job, and so far apparently they do a good job. People like them.
Yeah, they're very well put together. I like them. Mm-hmm. John, you've been quiet for a while.
Have I been?
You said you wanted to say something about the Green Lantern.
Yeah, well, I know since Alex likes comics, I was curious what he thinks of like the upcoming Green Lantern and Thor films.
I'm kind of torn. I'm not a big Green Lantern fan. I enjoy him, but jewelry on a guy, I don't know. And it'd be interesting to see, because its power is so hard to do on film, in the sense that it's not real dramatic. You have a guy who basically just stands there looking determined while a special effects fights around him. So that'll be a tough one to do. It's going to be a tough sell. Thor.
I just kind of had a mental vision of Ryan Reynolds, you know, standing there and a director going, okay, now give me passion.
Yeah. But that's what give 90% me of it's going to be like. Reynolds in a costume, and the director goes, look determined.
Oh, he's not even in a costume. His costume is CGI.
What?
Yes, his costume is CGI.
Okay, well, I guess that's the next step. But I mean, isn't that most of modern filmmaking today is a lot of CGI? It's basically, imagine this tennis ball is something else, right?
Yes.
You watch.
Yes.
From The Matrix all the way till, you know, we just finished watching Percy Jackson, right? And it's, you know, how much of that was kids talking to a tennis ball? Right. We won't get into the fact that it doesn't match the books and that negativity element. But I mean, really, that's what most modern filmmaking seems like to me, especially for action pictures. How much of it is real, right? Versus how much.
That's interesting, but that's always struck me as a little strange, because it's like, you know, in 1985, it'd be like I'm acting with a puppet. Like the xenomorph from Aliens is like a puppet.
Hey, you leave Yoda alone.
And I'm like, I love Yoda, but it's like, how is that different than acting with a? I mean, the actor's like that actor has to act like he's being attacked by like a monster. He's not being attacked by a monster. It's not like the puppet. It's like the director's like, we're gonna kill you. So I think acting. I think sometimes we get the CGI a little bit of a harder time than it deserves. I mean. Yeah. Yeah, sometimes people abuse it, but people abuse all this stuff.
And there was nothing wrong with Yoda, but him sounding like Fozzie Bear, that was weird.
I was thinking Miss Piggy.
Grover. It sounds like Grover.
I actually thought he sounded like the guard from the Blues Brothers that lets Jake out of prison.
Wait a second. Hold on. Let me. Wait.
Pick your favorite Frank Oz character.
You know, we're almost to the Lucas utopian stage in Hollywood where he doesn't have to deal with any actors anymore. It's all CGI.
That's yeah, what good he's for wanting. Him.
That's what yeah. he wants. Because actors, they get in the way.
Well, you know, they do. I mean, animated films are a new renaissance because, and they you know, they don't involve actors in the same degree. And, you know, some of the finest films are being made now. So, if anything, Hollywood kind of made itself a prisoner to actors and then got kind of upset that it did. So, it's like it opened the door and created its own problem. And then it was like, well, we had to find a way to replace these expensive actors that we made too expensive.
Yeah, so let's do it with animation. And, I mean, to be honest with you, I love the DC animated movies. I don't know if you've been watching those.
Yeah, the Green Lantern one actually made me wish I liked Green Lantern.
Oh, yeah, that was an excellent. Because
it's really good.
Yeah.
And I was like, tried reading the comic books, and I was just like, this is boring.
the Wonder Woman movie was also very excellent.
Yeah. Excellent, yeah.
Yeah. Let's see, what else do we have to talk about?
What about the game? I got a question. Can I ask?
Yeah, go.
So being we were talking about movies, do you have a desire to see any of your books made into a movie? And if you did, which one would it be?
And since you do the all around average guy, is your eye on Bruce Willis?
Well, four of my books have an option for movies, and they're at various stages. Guilds is probably the closest, so it's got a good shot. I don't know. It's a weird thing, you know. To be honest, I want it to happen because it's nice money, and it's great exposure. Do I necessarily care that much about, like, am I excited about it? I don't know. It's hard to say. I'm excited for the exposure and the money, and the possibility it might be good. But for the most part, Hollywood is such a different. Process, you know, like one of the reasons I chose to be a novelist is I can do so many things that I can't do as a producer. I mean, one of the things that, like, almost all my characters are not good looking, which is really unusual even in fiction, because people like good looking people too much to the point that even if a character they're not looking at is described as good looking. All my characters are like, usually, like, if I want to do something big, like explode the universe, it doesn't cost a lot of money, you know. It's the same amount of pages, you know, and it really gives me a sort of a limitless palette, you know, to work with. And, like, even the fact that I don't use recurring characters is part of the reason that fiction likes to use recurring characters is they're basically the equivalent of actors. You have a name to draw people into. And as a writer, you know, I'm lucky enough that I don't have to get away with it, but I can get away with not doing it. But so I'm very excited about the prospect of some movie stuff going on. But I also realize it's such a different medium with so many different rules and such a different investment of time and money that, you know, I'm just part of a small part of the process. And one of the reasons I like writing novels is I'm a big part of the process. So you know, it's just different things for different reasons.
Sure. Did that answer your question, Tim?
Pardon? Yeah, that was a great answer, right? I was still trying to find out if he's going to let Bruce Willis be in one of the pictures. Bruce Willis,
I'll let whoever wants to be in the movie, but
and if you're looking for a not a good looking guy, I can definitely fit that role.
I'll take whoever they want. You know, it's all about star power. So, but they've all been optioned in animated form. So it'll be. If they ever go anywhere, it'll be with voice actors. So you'll have that thing where you have a picture of a cartoon not saying anything, and underneath it, like, Bruce Willis. I'm like, that's not Bruce Willis. It's not even...
And Eddie Murphy as the donkey.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, I look at voice work being done today, right? So Mark Hamill, right? So he's known as the whiner from Star Wars, but, you know, he's made a fine living as a voice actor.
Best Joker ever.
He is, right? You play Arkham Asylum or watch the Batman the Animated Series, and if I don't hear that voice as the Joker, it's not the Joker.
See, yeah, but that's right? What I don't like. That's what I worry about, because what makes characters like the Joker or Batman or Sherlock Holmes or any other billion characters timeless is that they don't become identifiable with a certain single individual. And I love Mark Hamill's Joker. I do. But I don't mind hearing another Joker, because to me, the Joker transcends Mark Hamill. And that's what I love about animation and comic books and fiction is it becomes transcendent of any particular person. Because, you know, sort of to kind of paraphrase, you know, Batman Begins, it's like the Joker is a symbol. He's not a person. And as soon as you make him a person, you lose him.
Sure. But I mean, I'm the first one to admit, when I get one of these new DC animated movies, like I just got Under the Red Hood, if I don't see Kevin Conroy on there as Batman, I'm immediately disappointed.
Yeah, I agree.
I mean, he's the best voice. He just does it so well, you know?
And, well, yeah, but there's some really good ones too. I mean, like, wasn't it one of the Baldwins who did Crisis on Two Earths? I thought he did a good job.
Yeah, I think it was it Adam?
I'm not sure which one it was.
Yeah, I think it was Adam.
If only there was a resource out there that would tell us what who could have possibly been in that movie.
Some place we could turn to that would have all these answers.
I'm not sure. I don't think anything like that exists.
Or if it did, it'd be cool if there was some sort of app on my phone that I could use to access it remotely. Maybe someday.
Alas.
Hey, Alex, you mentioned you like gaming. What kind of games you play?
Well, I play World of Warcraft.
Woohoo,
of course.
For the Horde.
There you go. Okay, we can be friends, because otherwise I'd have to kick your ass. And
well, that's good, because he wants to be in your movie.
And yeah, he can be in my movie now. And I play a lot of board games, card games. I really like Monster Apocalypse now, which is a collectible kaiju giant monster board game. It's a lot of fun. And what other one am I really liking? No, that's about it for now.
Are you into StarCraft?
No, not really. I don't really like real times that much. Real time strategies, they're okay. The new one looks pretty cool. I played the first one a little bit and I enjoyed it. But so they're fun and I can enjoy them sometimes. I think I got burned out because years ago from my Genesis, I had a Dune real time strategy game. I don't know if you guys ever played that.
Yes.
And I played that so long that I think it burned me out real time. I mean, I kept my Genesis just to play that game.
I had a friend who would bring over Nobunga's Ambition. Same concept, feudal Japan.
Oh.
I got so sick and tired of growing rice.
Not even real rice, virtual rice.
Yeah, it's like I got the Star Trek The Next Generation game. I think it was for Sega Genesis. And I used to get so sick and tired of the boring storyline, and I would just kind of skip ahead, take my Enterprise into the neutral zone and start shooting at Romulans. Until Captain Picard took my command away, you know? It was like...
a serious dressing down.
Yeah, I could go for like 5 minutes before he'd say, you know, you're violating this law and this law and blah, 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 and I'm taking you off of command. And then he'd, you know, the game would start over. So
actually, it'd be 4 minutes, and then he'd have to adjust his shirt, then he'd give you a dressing down.
It's like I told DiNardo the other day, it was a sad day on the bridge of the Enterprise when Captain Picard ordered Worf to fire at will.
No. Oh, hey ho.
Nerd humor.
Do you even want to share what server you're on? Do you care?
I'm on Bloodhoof with most of my characters.
Is that PvP, PvE?
No, with PvE. PvE. I got PvP. I started it on, and I didn't mind it. I didn't mind getting killed. Who cares? But I felt bad one time. Like, I'm walking through like the Desolus, and this gnome's walking by, and just like, and I can see that I can totally kill her, and she starts running off, and I shot her, and I was just afterwards. I was like, well, now I feel like an ass, because I was like, she was gonna fight me. I'm not. Why did I do that? It was more. It's like fight and flight just popped in. It was just like she ran, and I was like a wolf. I have to kill. And afterwards,
that's
I was just
the
like,
spirit.
Yeah, and afterwards, I was just, I want to go to PvP or if I see some, I mean, PvE. So that way, if I see somebody, yeah, they can just walk along. I don't have to worry about it.
Most of my characters are on Earthen Ring. And I remember I have a friend who was playing Alliance and I was playing Horde. He's like, come on, we got a duel. I said, nah, I don't want to duel. I don't do PvP. He's like, no, come on, we got to do it. I'm like, I don't want to do it. He's like, no, come on, it'll be fun. Come on.
I'm like, fine. So he flags, I flag, we start fighting, and along come like two, I think we were probably level 40 at the time. Along come two level 60 Alliance. I don't even want to say the word because then I got to change the tag on the podcast. But they just come riding up and like, oh, cool, an undead mage that we can kill. And I'm dead. And I'm like, you planned that.
I didn't plan it. I swear.
I didn't plan it. I'm sorry, dude.
So I did want to ask you about Cranky Dead. Part two, part three.
The short story. I don't know where it is. I had it on my website and it got, and now it's out on the internet somewhere because the website got changed and I lost it.
Oh my
God. So it's somewhere out there. I think I might have an old computer, but I'm not sure where it is. That's my only sequel. The thing I wrote is sort of a short, sort of a 30-page story sequel to Gills, sort of. Which I kind of regretted afterwards because someone wanted to almost considered optioning it, and I couldn't option it because I had to option Gills and everything related to Gills. And that was another case where I was like, I'm just going to not write sequels because then I can option everything if I get really, really lucky, and I've been really lucky so far.
Sounds like it. Well, that's interesting that you lost it. That's kind of crazy.
Well, I'm sure it's somewhere. You know, I'm sure someone. I think someone, one of my my visitors on my website was able to point out an online place I could find it because I have also two online novels that I published before my first book came out. Maybe like 4 years before my first book came out, and they're still available if you look for them in the right place. They're Nigh Omnipotent and Black Magic and Silver Bullets, which are available somewhere if you can look for those, and you can get them for free because they're just online.
Gotcha. And what's your writer's group you were talking about yesterday?
The DFW Writer's Workshop is a writer group in Dallas. We meet every Wednesday. I've been going like 16 years now.
Wow.
It's it's been around for I think 25 or so. It's a really good resource if you happen to live in the Dallas-Fort Worth area and you're not using it. I mean, I got there completely by accident. I just moved to Dallas. I was all the way on the other side of Dallas, like totally different area. And one of my friends just happened to find this flyer for the group. And I don't know why it was in this supermarket or how it got there. And I was even like, I don't want to go. My mom was like, look, you're going to go. It's like, you can at least go. And I was like, okay, I'll go. And she was right. So I went. And it was, at that time, it was a much smaller group. But it was still pretty big. And it was mostly older Western writers. But we don't specialize in genre. We didn't specialize back then. And I showed up, and they were really cool. And I was like, well, I'm going to give it a shot. So I went the next week, joined, read my weird demon in hell library thing, and they gave me some really great feedback, and I was just like, and I've been going ever since. And I'm a vice president now. So, I tell anybody who's serious about writing, if you're living in Dallas Fort Worth area and you're not like part of this group, you're missing out because it's great. We don't have any requirements. We all kind of levels of writing, no genre specific. We do everything, and it's a great group. And we're having a conference the last like 3 years. And it's getting bigger and doing a really good job. So I'm really proud to be a member of the group.
That's awesome.
Mm-hmm.
I wish we had something like that up here in Denver.
Yeah, it's an amazing resource to have out in the middle here. I mean, we're really. I'd like to say I planned on it when I moved down here, but it was just pure dumb luck and worked out really great. I would not be published without the help of the group. I mean, not just in my writing, but like literally. They got in touch with my editor. Like, kept meeting him at different members of my group. Kept meeting him at different events, and he'd just taken over his position at Tor, my first editor. And I needed a new writer, and they said send. And he kept talking to him, and so he asked to see something, and it wouldn't have happened. I never would have met him.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Have you ever been to Denver?
No, I haven't been to Denver.
as the longer we talk, the more your voice sounds familiar. And I saw an author at a reading not too long ago, and I thought maybe it might have been you, but my memory escapes me, so I can't recall.
Well, it wasn't me.
Ah, gotcha. Now, you have the website, aileymartinez.com.
Yeah.
Are you on Twitter?
Yes, I'm on Twitter under Ailey Martinez.
Okay.
And I'm on Facebook under Ailey Martinez. And
but that's convenient. So,
yeah. Well, it's not a great name. Like, when I chose it, I didn't realize how confusing it is. It's like it's a little wordy, little tricky, but nobody has it, so it's nice. It wasn't like when I went to register my website, it wasn't like somebody was like, Ailey Martinez, yeah, there's 16 of those guys. No, it's just me. Bumbling through success through bumbling stubbornness. That's what I like to think of my life as.
And on your website, you have a lot of recommendations for comics, games, books, DVDs. That's kind of cool. I agree with you. Justice League Season 2 was pretty good.
Not pretty good. It was the best. It's the best thing that's ever been on television. Justice League Unlimited Season 1. Best thing that's ever been on television.
Yeah, Justice League Season 2. Didn't that end with Starcrossed?
Yeah. Was that the one with the Thanagarians?
Yeah.
Yeah, that was a good one. I like that. I feel like the show started out strong, but it got stronger as it went. But Justice League Unlimited Season 1 is everything awesome about comic books and television, superheroes. Everything that's great about any kind of great storytelling in one, it's just nothing will ever be better than that. That TV, they might as well just shut TV off and just forget it. It's never going to get better.
Tim, John, do you guys have any other questions?
I'm good. I totally had enough of him. No, I can't think of it.
Really? I actually have another question. So I've got another serious question. So the first book I read by you is In the Company of Ogres, right? And so I read a lot of Pratchett prior to that. And so I was wondering, you know, do you ever get the comparison, you know, you're not as funny as Pratchett, or I like you better than him, or... you know, because you look at the reviews. I was out looking at Amazon. They make that comparison between In the Company of Ogres and a lot of the Discworld novels. And I was just wondering what your opinion was on that.
You get that comparison a lot. You can't help it because there's certain names that become just synonymous with a certain genre, and you're just not going to avoid it. I've gotten comparisons. I don't take them as negative. I mean, it's just part. It's inevitable. I don't know how to respond to it. You know, I mean, I only hate it when somebody unfairly compares me to those guys. If, you know, Pratchett or Douglas Adams or I get Christopher Moore a lot, and I'm like, I don't mind if somebody's like, you know, we all compare. That's okay. But when somebody says like, you know, he's not as funny as Pratchett. I'm like, well, first of all, I'm not trying to be as funny as Pratchett. I'm trying to write a different kind of style. And I only hate the category. But otherwise, if it comes across in a just as a sort of jumping off point, I don't have a problem with it. I don't think we're very alike at all. I don't think I write very much like Pratchett or any of these other guys. But, you know, it's all who's to say? I mean, it's all in the eye of the beholder.
At least it's a – I mean, if they're comparing you to them, that's a bit of a compliment.
Well, it can be. Sometimes it is. Sometimes it's very nice. Sometimes it's like, I love Ted Paxton. I love this guy. Well, I can't be mad about that. I mean, sometimes it'll be negative. Like one review, one of my favorites was there was a review that said that I'd clearly ripped off Christopher Moore's style, and I'd never even heard of Christopher Moore. So never read a book of his. It was only after the fact, like when the book came out, and there was a Christopher Moore, somebody compared me to Christopher Moore, Spider Robinson compared me to Christopher Moore on the back, that I even read a Christopher Moore book. And I was, and so it's kind of funny to see that where And there's like another, there's a great review for Automatic Detective talking about all the influences on it that it sounds so smart, makes me sound so well read. I haven't read any of that stuff. And I'm totally like, wow, what a great, I'm so awesome. You have to be so well read to understand what I'm trying to do. Even I don't understand my genius.
I think more than that, comparisons like that really just give readers a handle on what type of book it is. So kind of like an if you like Pratchett or if you like this, yeah, then you may like this
yeah,
kind of thing.
Yeah, it's, I mean, I can't really complain. Again, it's sort of this thing I struggle with because I am labeled a comic fantasy writer, even though I don't consider myself a comic fantasy writer. And that's my only concern. But how can you be complaining when you're compared to people that are successful and popular? So
I'm like, there are worse things to be compared to.
Yeah, you know, it's like I can't really complain about it, but I do think sometimes it creates unfair or strange expectations.
That's like people compare my guitar playing to Stevie Ray Vaughan. And I get it all the time. They're like, you know, why do you suck so bad? Why couldn't you be more like Stevie Ray Vaughan?
I knew that was coming. I just knew it. There was no other answer for that.
So, John DiNardo, I know that you had one more question up your sleeve. Go.
Hey, wait, why am I on the spot here? I'm not being interviewed. What's going on here? The tables have turned. Why don't you tell us about your latest book, Divine Misfortune?
That was going to be my question.
It's a contemporary fantasy about gods. I like to, basically, the best way I describe it is it's Seinfeld meets the Odyssey. And I'm not funny, but it's a funny book. It is a funny book. But I kind of want to
hello, try to... Ulysses.
That's good. Like that. And it's just the idea of like the gods, like sort of the mythological gods were still around and had always been around. And so, you know, the way that we've become civilized, they became civilized. And it's a lot more organized. And it's not about like faith. It's more about like the old mythology where it's like if you get a god in your life, it can mean great things, but it also probably means you're screwed. And so I just basically, that's it. Like, but instead of being about like, you know, getting the most beautiful woman, like this couple basically wants to get a promotion. So they get a god. Just sort of dealing with that. And I wanted to also write a story from a god perspective where the mythological gods, because they were kind of douchebags, if that's okay to say. And I wanted to do something with them and kind of explore what it would be like to be, basically an immortal, irresponsible person with no consequences and sort of their change as they develop. And that's what, like, you have, like, Quetzalcoatl, who I always wanted to write something with Quetzalcoatl in it, and he's like the down on his luck god because he kind of, like, you know, he turned his back for a second and Spaniards took out everybody. And he's just down on his luck, and he's sort of the god who's like dealing with that problem. And then you've got Lucky, who's this made up raccoon of luck, of prosperity god I made up. And it's all about his relationship with the people and how this couple and how it, and he also gets sort of a love story with another mortal and how it affects his view. And I think, it's not trying to be preachy, because I'm not preachy, but the lesson I always like about this, that book is about responsibility and how even when you don't have any consequences for something you do, that doesn't mean necessarily you shouldn't be irresponsible. And no one's picked that up yet, so I must be only in my head. but that's the theme that I came up with that story that I really wanted to explore.
And I, as a follow-up, are your books available in EPUB format?
I think most of them are. I haven't checked, but I know at least some of them are.
So John could download it on his iPad.
Sweet.
Yeah, probably. And I know so there's some audio. I think Gills came out in audio. You could download. And Gills and Automatic Detective came out in German audio, which is...
Well, you know,
very bizarre.
Not to be mean to the German people, but they sound so angry.
Yeah, it's funny when you listen to it because I can understand it because I know the story. So it'll be like, and I'm like, I know he's not mad,
but he sounds angry.
Like, but he sounds mad. But I'm like, but that's cool. As long as they love it, as long as they want it, I'm happy. Oh, and I wanted to mention, too, that I have a short story in Death's Excellent Vacation anthology that just came out.
Oh, very cool.
Which is an anthology of short stories of by various much more successful writers than me, including Charlene Harris, who was, you know, creator of the Sugi Stackhouse, and that they made True Blood on that. And so she's really popular. She's a lovely lady. And she was nice enough to invite me because she's been very nice to me. And so this is my chance to kind of reach out there. So it's a wonderful opportunity. I'm just glad to be invited.
So, Alex, you said that you don't have or you don't meet with fans very often. Are you planning on attending any conferences or any conventions or anything in the near future?
Yes, I'll be at ArmadilloCon at the end of this month, and I'll be at FanCon later this year. And I think that's the only two I have this left this year. I do about four or five of the area conferences, and I'm always happy to be invited. It's a great opportunity.
And
it's just I don't get invited that many times because I'm not that important.
Well, we're going to change that.
No, I hope so.
Now, the ArmadilloCon, that's named after the fictitious armadillo creature that some Texans claim exist?
They exist. They only exist dead, though. That's the mystery.
You only see them on the road.
That's right. You only see them dead. But
I think you just...
Holding a Lone Star.
I think you just created the next great book franchise, Armadillo Vampires. The undead armadillos.
Well, it's hard to get at stake because they roll into a ball.
Yes.
It's really hard to get at stake.
I'm seeing a winner here. Just remember, we all get credit in the...
Oh, yeah. When they make the movie, you'll get a special thank you. You won't get any money, but you get a special thank you.
At that point, he'll go, who?
Who? SF, what?
Single who is system. This?
I'm John DiNardo. John DiNardo.
I like bagels. Well, I think this has degenerated pretty quickly. Should we call this a night, gentlemen? I'll take your silence as an assent that yes, we're done. John wants a bagel. Tim apparently wants some sauerkraut. And Alex is ready for a little, let's see, barbecue?
No, I'm a vegetarian.
Vegetarian. Well, they make veggie chili. You could get some veggie chili.
Oh, that's true. That's true.
I'll give you my sauerkraut. Just offering.
All right. Well, I think we're done for the evening. I want to thank you guys for coming on. Thank you, Alex. Remember, you can check out his stuff at aleemartinez.com. He's also on Twitter, twitter.com/aleemartinez. You can find his books on Amazon or support your local bookstore. It's up to you.
Thank you so much for having me.
No problem. We enjoyed it. Hope you'll come back again.
Oh, anytime.
And John DiNardo and Tim, thanks for coming on, guys.
Thanks for having me.
And I think we're done. Good night.
Good night.